What's good, y'all? This is Breeze Brewing from the Mighty Juggernauts. And make sure you subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel, hip-hop journalism on the highest level.
Yeah, what's up? It's your boy, Joel Ortiz, and I want everybody to make sure that they subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. Yo, Tim, I hope all is well. You my guy. I know these interviews are not interviews. They're actually conversations, and I appreciate them all. Yalla.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is IT. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It is old fucking official. All right? Stop playing. Download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It's cold.
Make your imagination a reality. Just keep telling yourself to then make believe.
Kango Crew, Nightmares, Delancey Street. Artist, hip-hop legend. He's Dana Dane, and I want to welcome him to AllHipHop.com presents the Library with Tim Einenkel. Dana Dane, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, Tim. Thank you very much, man, for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. So I'm going to kind of have to first be a little all over the place, but then it'll make sense, hopefully. So in 1999, at the age of 16, obviously someone you know really well, Kwame, released his debut album, right? Kwame the Boy Genius, featuring New Beginning. On the track, the man who we all knew and loved, he says in interviews, he said it was very influenced by Slick Rick and yourself. I believe at this time you and Kwame would either come to your studio and watch you guys record, and you guys became really cool then. What do you remember most about Kwame when he first, you know, came into your studio, and what has impressed you since?
Well, when I first saw Kwame, it was basically outside of the window of it was before that, but you know, when I had a conversation with outside of the window of the attic of Herbie Lovebug's house, because that's where we used to do the music when I first started working with Herbie Lovebug. Did a song called Delancey Street, and we were working on that song. It's the first song we were working on, and Kwame came by, and he was downstairs, and he was friends with Herbie's brother, Stevie O, the boy wonder who's younger. And and somehow we got into the conversation about his name. He said his name was something Big Daddy K, something, something, and another, right? It's a long name. And I'm like, so what's your name? He said, my name is Kwame. I said, I think you should get rid of that and just go for that. You know what I mean? So that was our first real interaction. And then after that, he would show up at Bayside Studios and sometimes to watch his work, Herbie, with Salt and Pepper, with myself, and then later on it was with Kid and Play. But the first thing I noticed about Kwame is his ambition and his diligence. You know, sometimes I come to the studio for my sessions and he'd be there all alone, you know, figuring it out for himself, because he didn't really know how to produce an album, but he was learning as he was going. And, you know, I heard some of the music he was making himself, and it was really, really great music. A lot of people don't know that Herbie Lovebug did not produce per se when it comes to making the music on the album. Now, he may have helped a little bit with the mixing and things of that sort and getting a deal, but that was the 100% Kwame the Boy Genius putting in his early work right there. You know?
This is for your debut album?
No, this is for his debut album.
Oh, for his debut album. Okay, gotcha.
Kwame's debut album, the man we all know and love, it was he produced all the music. Herbie, I think, just helped tighten up some of the stuff in the mix. But for the most part, it was always Kwame in the studio, in there working by himself, building out this project as a 16-year-old.
When did you know? I mean, when you, with Kwame, for example, when did you know, when besides, maybe it happened on his album, but when did you hear him, like, kind of fully come into his own as a producer, where you knew he was ready to, like, kind of, you know, something he could do on his own, right?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, him though, at the time, I wasn't even thinking about it like that. You know, he was doing the work at the time, and it was in my mind that Herbie was guiding him and helping, you know. But it would be later, a couple of years down the line, when the album came out and became successful, that we would find out that Herbie didn't actually put his, you know, his music on that project. It was him. It was just Kwame. So that was my, you know, it wasn't like it was an instant thing. Like I knew Kwame was doing such great work, but you know, he did have me in some of the videos. The Man We All Know and Love, I was in that video as well. And he was directing videos, and he really had a vision for what he wanted to do early on. And that's what I noticed, you know, with the polka dots and just the vision of it all.
I want to, of course, go into your legacy a little later, but I think in terms of, you know, you talk about Kwame knowing his vision and knowing what he wants to do. I think a perfect song that kind of stands out to me, you know, and listening to it when it happened, but also in hindsight, is your track early on, Nightmares. And I think what you do on Nightmares is, for its time, especially in the 80s, is pretty incredible, because what it is, it's a video and it's a song that kind of takes place as a therapy session.
Yep.
And if we think about today's, and you know, you think about mental health in general being kind of a, you know, it's something you don't really talk about, right? But I think more and more now today's MCs are talking about it. But back then, when you did Nightmares, were you approaching it as kind of almost like a mental health track? And why did you take it on as a therapy session?
You know, that was just by coincidence. And see, I was trying to, what I was doing was I was trying to copy off Houdini, the Haunted House of Rock. So that's where the inspiration for Nightmares came from, Houdini. And, you know, I said, man, I want to make a song like Houdini's Haunted House of Rock, but not Houdini's Haunted House of Rock. You know, I wanted to have more story involved. You know, when there's, you know, you just listen to them talking about the music is playing and say, hey, get out of my way because I don't want to run over you. You know, and so like, fun. And I thought that was fun. So I was trying to find the angle to bring my story together and just try to find something that would kind of be similar to theirs. And the thing I came up with was Nightmares. And so that was the hook, Nightmares. And then I tried to, then I had to figure out, what do you do when you have nightmares? And I didn't approach it from a mental health issue per se, with what was going on in life, but I approached it because I thought that was the best way to get the story across, you know what I mean? And creating the character Dr. Slumber and her having to, interview me and find out what's wrong, and I had to tell her the story, was the best way to involve the listener at the time.
Can you take us into the for you, for Nightmares, the writing process at the time? And I mean, are you an MC that has to hear a beat first to write around it, or do you usually have the concept that you want and then you find that perfect beat that works with you?
Yeah, that was always my style. I was the type that wrote the rhyme and then figured out what music went to whatever I wrote, and which was kind of difficult many times, you know. But when it came to Nightmares, and as I was writing it, I knew what the music was. I knew what the sound was. I knew what the hook was. I knew everything except for what the drum track was. And that was when I went to Sam Jacobs Jr. He was the actual producer of the song. And he had a DMX drum machine with 99 tracks on it. And I went through there and I found the beat that I liked. And once I found the beat, I said, yo, we need somebody to play this, this, and this. And that's when he called his father, Sam Jacobs Sr., who was a jazz musician. He said, oh, my father could play all that stuff. And he brought his father in and he played the bass line and he played the the guitar line, and the rest was history. They helped produce it. I didn't know much about producing at the time, but I knew what I wanted.
I want to talk about Kwame again, because and this is me going to be all over the place again, but you know, your latest track, Nightmares Again, is produced by Kwame and Gordy Groove. And you know, what has to stand out right away as someone who's heard you for a long time is that you've lost the English accent in this song. Why the change of the, why losing the English accent now?
Yeah, so when I did the English accent early on, it became second nature because the group I was in was called the Kingo Crew.
Right.
It was Slick Rick, it was Lance Brown, it was Kool Aid Ski, Omega the Heartbreaker, and myself, those five members. And so three of the members were from Jamaica, West Indian, London, you know, descent. And then it was me and Kool Aid Ski from Brooklyn. So we had American accents and, you know, the sound of American rap was raw and raw. You know, it was very pronounced at the time. And so when I was learning my craft and honing my craft with the Kango crew, Rick and Lance and Omega had this slight accent when they rap, and it came through as a like an English accent. And they were trying to sound, to me, sound more American. I was like, y'all are bugging out. Y'all didn't sound like that. And so as I developed my style, I was developing it with that English accent, because it sounds smooth, it sounds suave. When I rocked on stage, it gave me a different ambiance to the crowd. And you know, it just felt good. But as years progressed, you know, and, you know, I really got into my career. And I've learned this about a lot of artists, and you probably noticed as well. We start somewhere sounding like something, and sometimes later on we end up sounding like something else. Some artists have been able to keep their sound from day one to now, but some of us, our voices change, our flow changes, our style changes, and things of that sort. And it was just a natural progression for me to leave the accent out more and more. Because people, after a while, were getting caught up in that and not really... you know, taking in consideration that still the records are dope, you know, the sound is still the same. The lyrics are still the same, you know, it's still dope. But the accent, hey, I did a Will Smith, you know, I just changed it up.
were you actually expected to have a, like, an English accent? Or did people expect you to have an English accent all the time? Like, I mean, like, you know, on the record is one thing, on stage is one thing, but meeting people, you know, after the show or in interviews as well. I mean, was that expected as well, or were you able to change it to, you know, what we hear now?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I used to play around with the English accent and have it in, but yeah, a lot of people was like, "We're the English accent." I said, "Hey, that's how I am when I rhyme, man. You know, I'm just like the Beatles, man. You know, when they rhyme, they sound like they're American. When they talk, they sound like they're English. So I'm just the opposite."
And it's interesting that I grew up, you know, I'm a kid from Washington Heights. You know, you were born in Queens, but raised in Brooklyn. You know, we're both from the birthplace of hip hop, right? Yeah. So you think, especially early on at the time, if you're an artist that, you know, maybe you would play that up, right? You'd play up the New York, you know, the quote unquote New York accent, but you obviously didn't. You played up, you know, you played this English accent. Was that a debate for you to do? I mean, I know you're part of the Kango crew, so that was an influence for you, but did you ever go back and forth like, maybe this is not right, or this is maybe I could go, I don't know, quote unquote, further if I just stayed to my my Brooklyn roots?
Yeah, you know, I never thought of it like that really early on. I thought it was just really dope. I thought the sound was dope. I thought that people would appreciate, you know, the sound. I like hearing it coming from the rest of the crew. It was something that we created. It was something that wasn't being done. So nah, I didn't feel no way about it, except for it was mine. You know, it was ours. You know, we created it. It was our flow. It was our sound. So you know, when you create something, you know, yeah, people can get in your ear and try to make you feel like you're going down the wrong path, but you got to remember, you know, what's yours, you know, what's unique about you. And that was unique about my style. You know, I was a Brooklyn kid who could throw on an English accent and rock it very lovely. You know what I mean? So it's full up.
And it goes to the school of thought where, like, you know, like DMC, you know, from Run DMC says it best, where he goes, you know, everyone's rhyming red, you got to rhyme blue. Right. Like, yeah, you know, so like, it's like, it's you just, yeah, being different or being, you know, standing out in the way that, I want to ask you about, Nightmares again, because, you know, it's this horror film story about your wedding that turns into this nightmare of a day. You know, it's a great horror film, right? But, what's great about it is that you do this guest list, that you spit a star-studded affair, and you have like DJ Clark Kent, Jay-Z, Beyonce, the Obamas, D-Nice, Nas, Will, Jada, Nikki, Ice-T, Coco, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you've been doing this, you know, over 40 years, right?
Yeah, about 30-something now. 1985.
30-something. Okay, I'm rounding up.
Take it.
Could you imagine, like, did you ever imagine when you started out 20 and now 2021, that you could even have spit something on a track that had this kind of star-studded affair?
You know, man, when I wrote this song some years back, and My star-studded lineup was more just rappers at the time. Mm. You know what I mean? It was Outkast. It was Houdini. You know, Slick was still there. You know, it's just a few of the friends, and it was shorter. And so when I, you know, when I rewrote the rhyme to fit the times, I thought it was only right to do it with so many great people who have come from nothing almost. You know what I mean? Like, Oprah from nothing, Beyonce, Jay-Z from nothing. It's like all these people built their stardom in, and a lot around hip hop to me. You know what I mean? These people that I picked out to me built their lives somehow or another. Hip hop has brought them to center stage. Even Barack and Michelle, I feel like hip hop helped get them into that White House. You understand right. what I'm saying? Oprah, not so much as hip hop, but she comes from nothing for me, and she is like at the top for females. You gotta have her in there, you know what I mean? But nah, at the time, you know, it was never a thought in my mind that I would spit with so many great people at my wedding, because yeah, they were at my wedding. But it was, you know, just to be able to do it and give highlight to some of the people that I admire. You know, that from whatever they've done, and people that I know for that matter, you know, D Nice, Clark Kent, you know, Ice-T, P.E. I don't know the Obamas. I do know Jay-Z. I don't know Beyonce. You know what I mean? Will and Jada, I know them. But it just was special to me because now I knew it was going to live forever. But the, you know, the harder thing about doing it though, Tim, is that you can't get everybody in there, and it was so many. I wanted to add, you know what I mean?
So, right, it'd be like a 30-minute song.
Yeah.
If you were to take let's say three of the names in your star-studded guest list on this track that for you have had maybe the biggest impact, whether you know them or not, on you as an artist, you as a person, who would those three be?
Oh man, that's a great question. Well, start off, you know, first and foremost, it was started with Slick Rick because he's a friend of mine. We went to high school. We developed our hip hop style together, and we came up together. So that's a boys to men friend. So he has inspired me. He continues to inspire me. So of course, it would be him. After that, it gets a little tougher because you know there are a lot of great people on this list. Eddie Murphy. I would have to pull him out of there, Murphy, because I met him early on in my career, and he was really blowing up, and he was at the top of his career, his leather days, you know what I mean? His leather on stage days. So, and I was going to his house and hanging out. So that was an inspiration as well. And then, you know, it's a toss-up after that between anyone that's on the list, because everyone there has inspired me in one way or another. But I think if I had to pick anyone on the list, I'm going to have to go with Barack for that last one, or maybe Oprah, you know, because just the foundations of what they set up for their lives and the discipline they put behind becoming who they are, just like the rest of them. Don't get me wrong. You know what I mean? Jay-Z and Beyonce, they have the discipline as well. But it's just something about Barack's cool, calm demeanor and Oprah's, you know, never stop. Always grow, become better, idealism that really, you know, touches me, you know what I mean? So we'll go with those three.
Nice. Dan, I want to change the direction and kind of start a little earlier on in your career. You know, you mentioned, you mentioned your group, the Kango Crew, and you talked about how you guys met up, but how did I guess when you guys got together, how did you know hip hop was going to be that vehicle that kind of was gonna mend you together, be your vehicle that kind of kept you guys together?
Well, I don't think we did know. You know what I mean? I think everybody was having their own individual hip hop journey. Some of them more involved, some less involved. You know, I think me and Rick were involved to the same level. Like we were into the fashion side of hip hop. You know, we wanted to look good, be fresh, have Kangols on, Bally's, Wallabies, British Walkers, Playboys, Pumas, and we wanted to style out. That was really our thing. The hip hop part was a way for us, and for me, as I remember, to get girls to notice me. So, you know, I was rapping and girls would notice me. Gear and rapping meant girls to me. So two things that, you know, brought us together, Rick, Lance, Brown, Kulaski, and Omega, the Heartbreaker. One thing, we like to dress fresh. The other thing was that we liked the girls' attention. So creating routines and rapping was the thing that brought us together. As for, you know, it being hip hop, I can't say that they all were as impacted early on as I was, because from the first time I heard the tapes with, you know, from the Funky 4 Plus One More to, you know, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious and the Crash Crew, I was in, you know, not for rapping though. I wanted to be a B-boy, you know, I wanted to pop lock and things of that sort. And then when I found out that my body ain't work like that, then I went to my art. I fell back on my art because I was always an art student. So I started tagging. But then when I found out I didn't have enough guts to tag on a train, I was like, let me go to the next thing, which was fashion, which was not considered so much a part of hip hop at the time. But to me, it was. And from the fashion, it took me into the rap part.
I said, go right in, go right in.
Thank you. Well, I walk into the office with deja vu. Like I've been here before, you know how deja do. Now there's the doctor, summer poised to blow mine out. Is she feeling my sack? Don't let me find out. She greets me. Come on in, sir, and have a seat. Better yet,
please lay down and rest your feet.
I slid on the sofa, sat back, and settled in. She said parallel, legs crossed with pad and pen. Let's begin, she instructed. I took a deep sigh. Looking in her mid-condition, pretty brown eyes, a fleeting doctor slumber. You got to help me, please. I haven't been to sleep in countless weeks. It got to the point I can't differentiate what part's real and what part's fake. Something's got to give, cause I just can't bear to have another one of these crazy nightmares.